Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets. I'm Dr. Brad Miller, and joining me is registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hey, everyone.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. So this episode 133 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. And once again, we are in beautiful, I was going to say downtown Lawrenceville, but we're not, on the outskirts of downtown Lawrenceville is where we're broadcasting from.
Yeah, we're definitely not downtown.
Yeah. So actually unincorporated Gwinnett when we start getting technical, but yeah, address is Lawrenceville, Georgia. So welcome everyone. Beautiful day here. Hope it is beautiful wherever you are. So Angel.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about upcoming trip down to VMG Congress.
Yeah. So in Orlando, right. I think, the weather is supposed to be, I'm going to say mild, right? Like 65 to 70. I'm excited for Congress in the sense that it's been, what, 4 years now since we've been to one?
Three, I think. Yeah, I think we've skipped two. So, could be wrong, but...
So, Congress is truly meant to be like a congressional of all VMGs.
Right, so VMG, Veterinary Management Groups.
Yep.
Companies, Veterinary Study Groups.
Right.
So, that is the study group for veterinary medicine. The only...
That seemed redundant.
I know, but...
Thank you for dad-splaining or mansplaining.
It's a way for like-minded veterinarians to join kind of a small group and talk about business and other issues, any and every other issue. But to your point, yes, a Congress, it is when all of the different groups across the nation come together. And I think the only place it's ever been held is in Orlando.
Yeah. So, we've talked about VMG on the podcast before, but and probably Congress as well. As you said, we've been doing this for like 2 years now.
Right.
With episode number 133.
Yep.
But no, Congress is exciting because it's cool to see people in similar situations as you, right? Like we can go to these big like VMX conferences or Western conferences, but you never know, like, if the people that you're sitting next to are of the same.
Yeah. You can strike up a conversation with anybody, but yeah, it's just you just don't know maybe what their purpose of being there is and what they're trying to get out of it. And,
right.
I mean, again, you can have that conversation, but it's nice to have the like-mindedness of your peers around you. And every time we go to any event, whether it's our VMG group or a Congress, or if we're at another meeting and we meet somebody else that's in a VMG group, I always learn something and take something away from those conversations.
Oh, sure.
So
with that being said, so we will be gone. Are we going to record a podcast while we're gone, or are we going to skip a week?
I think we're going to skip Super Bowl Sunday. We're going to take that as a holiday because we're traveling back.
I think
you and your... holiday, that's what in Europe they call a vacation. Did you know that?
Yes.
Okay.
I watched TV.
I didn't know that until, I don't know, a couple of years ago. But I think you and your family are going down a little bit early. You're going to do a little bit of Disney and exploring and hopefully have some downtime.
Yep.
And then, I'll meet you guys down there at Congress. And then I think we all fly back on that Sunday when it's over.
Yes.
So looking forward to it for sure.
But that being said, we won't have a podcast before Valentine's Day.
All right. So that's a great intro
into some stories, right? So looking and kind of doing some research and things to talk about, like Valentine's Day is always, highly celebrated, I guess, among couples and that kind of thing. But this year I found it super interesting that there are more and more people looking for Valentine's ideas or ways to celebrate with their pets.
Okay.
And
all
so
right. Because pets are such a huge, important part of
part
our
lives. Part of our lives now.
And becoming more and more important every hour of the day.
And whether or not you have a significant other, your pet is still super important. And so maybe you aren't necessarily looking to replace your boyfriend or girlfriend, but rather include your dog in your celebrations.
I don't know what that meant. I was not paying attention, but anyway.
I'm just saying that, like, it's not like you either have a significant other that you're going to celebrate with or a pet. It's likely that you have both.
You may have both. Okay.
It's kind of what I was saying. So, anyways, in doing all of that, I basically went to Google.
Okay.
And I typed in Valentine's with my dog. And so a ton of these things kind of pre-populated. And so this is going to be a kind of a long story, but I printed off two articles.
Here we go.
So there's one that I got off of boardpanda.com, and it talks about like how we just couldn't imagine our life without a Google search engine. If anyone has an iPhone, you likely have Safari. It's going to take you right to Google or whatever, right? And so have you ever been typing into Google and it like auto-populates sure. a question for you?
For sure. You know, the great word to look up or start just typing vet, and it will auto-populate vet near me, veterinarian near me.
So apparently that is called Google Autocomplete, formerly okay. known as Google Suggest, but it basically is guessing what you're trying to type, and it's offering you an opinion in real time. And so it's super cool because oftentimes, like, I have been typing and I'm like, oh, okay, I'll pick that one instead of finishing, you know, mm-hmm. my yeah. typing. It saves me, you know, 1.5 seconds.
And
but
you think
still
it's
going
to search better because it auto-populates.
Yeah. yeah. So more apparently, so these results are actually based on true things that people have actually typed into Google.
Okay.
That is bizarre to me. Have you ever actually looked at some of them when you start typing in a question and you're like, well, that's bizarre. Like, who needs to know that?
I guess.
So, according to this article on Board Panda, it says, like, these results are not always super smart. They tell us what it thinks we want to hear based on what other people have already been asking it. So, get out your phone, open up your laptop, and try this. Can I eat? Right? And so look at all the things that it suggests. On this article of Board Panda,
okay.
one of the questions says, can I eat my cat?
Oh.
And it's like people, it has been asked enough in Google that it literally pre-populates. It is so bizarre to think about some of these things.
I'm going to try it right now because I wasn't prepared here.
I told you to be prepared, man. But anyway, so Google makes these suggestions based on search results that have truly appeared more and more times. So they're not just jokes. They're actually super real and made by real people who've asked them. And so definitely whenever you're super bored, just start typing things into Google and see what the world is asking. So.
Can I eat salami while pregnant? The answer is yes, you can. So, okay.
How funny.
All right, so this is where you got your...
yes.
I see 10 ways to spend Valentine's Day with your dog. I only see 8
yes.
listed. Do you have a plan? Are you going to ask our listeners to, like, suggest and we can complete the list? Like, be
No. So this 8 is because that's really what was there.
Oh.
But I thought it was very cute, the list of 10. I actually wrote down the other 2 that you're missing. So
go to
Google,
in.
How do you celebrate Valentine's Day with your dog? Then it comes up with this pre-populated 10 ways to spend Valentine's Day with your dog list. So again, tying it all back together, people are asking Google this because it pre-populated in my search.
Okay.
Which is so interesting.
Are we going to talk about these?
Or? We are. So okay. Number 1, find a delicious Valentine's Day dog treat. Nothing says I love you like a tasty treat.
Okay. It needs to be obviously for dogs. It doesn't need to be a lot of chocolate, right?
Yep,
so
yep.
Chocolate certainly can be very toxic to dogs, especially the dark and the baker's chocolate.
Number 2, get your pup a new Valentine's dog toy.
Okay.
So, we actually had Valentine's dog toys. We're sold out here in the practice, but we definitely anticipated that people would buy for their pets, and
oh,
so we
sure.
brought in Valentine's dog toys.
We kind of do the thing they do at the grocery store, right? Up on the counter, we have the little impulse buys,
yes.
and we try to be very seasonal with that. And,
yes.
And it's really for the, I mean, I guess we are trying to sell stuff, if I'm being honest, but it's really to try to enrich the lives of the pets. So,
of course.
Cool. All
yeah.
right. I didn't know we were sold out.
We are sold out. Number 3, arrange a play date.
Okay. We're talking about with another pet, hopefully that your pet likes.
Yeah. Right? Could be.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Number 4, go for a fun walk.
Okay.
Number 5, have a themed photo shoot.
Thought that was pretty interesting.
So I don't know that that's necessarily for the dog, but gosh, these themed photo shoots mm-hmm. make for social media.
Yeah, for sure.
Dogs wearing, you know, birthday hats or feather boas, that kind of thing. Super cute. Number six, give your dog a massage.
Okay. All right.
So doggy massage is actually a real thing, right? Like they actually have certificate program and courses and things like that, that people can attend or veterinary specific people can take.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately when you give your dog a massage, it's just essentially a rubbing.
It may make you feel better than the dog, depending on how good of a masseuse you are.
Yeah, but, for sure.
I mean, we don't do, I don't know, we do that, I guess, via petting, I'm going to say. But we do recommend massage, like with our ortho cases a lot of times. That's a little bit different. That's like a deep tissue.
Yes.
Versus the, yeah,
yes,
what we're talking about here. So, yeah. Okay.
So 7 and 8 are very similar in my opinion. So 7 says plan a spa day. And 8 says treat your pooch with a bubble bath.
So I'm going to disagree. To me, plan a spa day is you schedule a spa day with a groomer.
Okay.
Versus to me, treat your pooch with a bubble bath would be you doing it at home in the tub. I can just see, you know, like the little kid with
but
all
again,
the bubbles everywhere.
Don't you think it's really funny? Like how many pets do you think really enjoy a bubble bath?
Yep, exactly.
It's so personified.
Okay, my number 9 would be snuggle with your pet under the covers, like extra snuggle time.
Aw, that would be so cute. But no,
that wasn't
the
it.
Actual number 9 is make a goodie box or goodie bag for your pet.
Okay.
And then what would your number 10 be? So if these are top 10, what is your number 10 like being best?
Being the best?
Yeah.
Oh, because I was going the opposite way here. Give your dog kisses.
That's cute. It says actually plan a fun, adventurous day of activities your pet enjoys.
Or I thought about that, like going for a hike, but everybody doesn't enjoy a hike. So very cool. Just have you and your dog have a play date just with yourself, with each other.
Yep.
So, okay,
for sure.
Cool.
Very cool.
Neat. All right. So yeah, sorry we're going to, you know, kind of miss out on the whole Valentine's Day thing, but good that we got that in.
And for those cat owners, I mean, you could probably do all those things with your cat as well.
Yeah, I probably would not suggest the bubble bath at home. It usually doesn't work out very well. Word phrase of the day. We don't always do that, but I chose foreign body because we have had a lot of pets with foreign bodies over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So we often talk, whether it's you and I, me and other staff, or in the doctor's office, about how we in our clinic take for granted some of the words that we use or some of the procedures that we do because we just assume our owners know that. And I want to say foreign body would be one of those. I did not know what a foreign body was until I was in vet school.
Well, yeah, I would agree that unless it's happened to them or someone that they know and their pet, then no, yeah, you don't really understand what a foreign body is.
So, you know, we go into the exam room after x-raying the vomiting pet and we say, Ms. Smith, you know, your dog has a foreign body. And they look at us and shake their head. Okay. Are they thinking that there's like a foreigner, like a person somehow involved? What, you know, what are they thinking?
Is it embodying the whole animal?
Yeah.
Are they
possessed?
Well, I
mean, what is a foreign body? Like, is this an alien? Yeah. What is going on?
Yeah.
And so we typically would, as we continue to discuss, if they don't ask questions, you know, we let them know, you know, there's an obstruction, let's say a GI foreign body. There's an obstruction in the GI tract. We can, it's causing this, that, or the other. So
good that you mentioned that, right? Because a foreign body cannot, it can happen essentially anywhere.
It can.
Because you can step on a thorn and that's technically a foreign body.
Exactly. And I wanted to kind of go there. So foreign, you know, I didn't read Webster's definition, but basically in this instance, consider it not of self or not one's own, something strange, something unfamiliar. It doesn't have to be, you know, country related, which is what we typically, would use
foreign,
the word.
Yeah.
But foreign means maybe, you know, not supposed to be there is the way we use it. And then bodies just mean, it means object. And so to your point, it can be a gastric foreign body, which could be a bundle of hair ties that the dog ate out of the bathroom trash can. It can be pine straw that we pulled out of stomachs with an endoscope.
Underwear, golf gloves.
Golf gloves. Most recent one
Not
we
clubs,
had.
Gloves. Gloves.
Gloves. Gloves. Yes, golf gloves. Most recently, I pulled out what I believe after exploring a dog's abdomen and cutting into the small intestine. I believe it was a battery-operated mouse toy. Had a long tail. It was almost as big as a golf ball mm-hmm. by the time it absorbed all the liquid.
Like a cat then, toy, essentially, out of the dog's stomach.
Yeah, and then it had batteries in it. So when we x-rayed, all we saw was a dilated small intestine, which was actually most of the foreign body itself that didn't show up on x-rays, and then we saw the batteries and some of the metallic objects. So I was quite surprised when I reached down and pulled this big thing out.
So it's interesting. I walked by and I saw those x-rays up, and I was like, oh, that looks like a watch battery. Yeah. I mean, it's like those little round cell mm-hmm. batteries.
And then a couple of wires. And so, you know, maybe lesson to be learned there as a dog or cat owner is be careful with some of these toys, because sometimes they will enjoy them more than they should.
Sure. Well, that's with any toy, right? So, like, we have pulled, you know, rope toys out of dogs' intestines before. Mm-hmm. Pacifiers. Do you remember that dog? I think we pulled three pacifiers
bath toys
out of
yeah.
this one dog over three different procedures while
balls.
The family had an infant.
Yeah, I pulled like 15, 16 golf balls out of a dog's stomach, and the owner had only seen them eat one golf ball.
Oh, wow.
But they would be outside, you know, just practicing their chipping, and they'd probably look away, and the dog would go eat a golf ball.
That's kind of crazy.
But back to your point, yes, a foreign body does not have to be gastrointestinal. You can have a grass-on foreign body that penetrates the dog's thoracic skin into the chest cavity.
What does that mean, grass-on?
It's like the little seed part of tall blades of grass. Not grass like backyard grass, but like wheat, oat.
Okay.
In Texas, there's a lot of wild grasses, and we would see a lot of...
I thought you were, like, describing it, but you're saying, like, this is the type of foreign body.
Yeah,
I
grass
mean,
on
sticks.
A-W-N, right. And so...
We see more penetrating sticks here.
Yeah, we see between toes and the webbing of the toes. We'll see, yes, plant stick-type material.
What makes it... So let me ask a ignorant question, but... So we had a dog one time come in...
Again.
A dumb question. Well, it's fine, whatever. We had a dog come in one time that was impaled with a wire, like a garden barricade. Do you remember this? The family... Like a garden barricade, like a little garden fence.
Okay.
They literally brought the dog in with the wire, like, through it. It was, like, a penetrating and it was stuck.
Yeah.
Is it considered foreign if it stays there for a while? So, like a thorn. If you step on a thorn and it stays in your hand, is that a foreign object then?
It would be a foreign body in your... So... How?
I guess what I'm saying is, like, for it to be considered a foreign body, is it just because it's present, or does it have to stay for a period of time?
It needs to be in the body or your body, right? Okay. So penetrating wound, that's what you would call something that goes in and out, but the object's not in there.
Okay. So, like, if it goes in and it's stuck there, but we retrieve it out, if
it was
like,
a, it
paint
was a,
stayed, that would be there would be a foreign body from, like, the paint or something like
I mean,
that.
Technically, but you don't see that. But a fish hook in the mouth, mm-hmm. right? So you have your fishing pole in the corner of your garage, and you leave the treble hook on, and maybe there's a little bit of bait of some sort still on there, and then your chocolate lab is left loose in the garage. It invariably goes and bites down on the fishing hook, and then we... have a dog present to us with fishing hook and line in mouth. That's a foreign body in the mouth, right?
Okay. So, but it's a hook, but you're going to remove it.
And yeah, so we would remove it.
Okay. But, so same thing like a stick. I've seen this happen. Dogs are running in the yard. They've got sticks and they impale themselves in the chest or the abdomen.
Yeah.
It's a foreign body.
Or commonly with the stick, they'll bite down on a stick and they'll break the stick on the right side and left side of the mouth. So but the stick will get stuck in between their teeth on their hard palate.
On the roof, yeah.
You know, that's always a... kind of a shocker when you see that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess if you're listening, you know that you're listening, maybe send us maybe the craziest foreign body that either your pet has ever had or you know of or have heard of.
So we've seen ocular foreign bodies.
How can they send us? What's the best way?
Instagram is going to be the best. Like, just
post something
to our Instagram page.
Yeah, we've seen pieces of plant material stuck in the cornea of the eye. All sorts of crazy stuff.
Blades of grass stuck in dog's nostrils.
Yep. Sneeze, and out comes the blade of grass for sure.
Like the
dogs
backyard.
And cats.
Yeah. Blade of grass,
yeah,
for sure.
So pretty crazy. But I don't know. I just thought that's something that, again, we take for granted that might be educational and... you know, once a dog or cat eats a foreign body or object, you need to be extremely careful because likely they will eat it again if given the opportunity. Case in point, dog, I believe his name is Gizmo, we took all this pine straw out like a couple of weeks ago with the scope. Well, he was back in the clinic yesterday after eating pine straw, but fortunately we did not have to scope him again. So, okay. Another story I had kind of fits into our healthy pet, happy life segment, and also fits in the whole One Health concept that we've talked about before.
Sure.
Which is basically, I don't know, you explain it and I'll chime in, the One Health concept.
It's just mending animal health and human health.
Human health, so, animal health, everybody working together, yeah. Learning from each other, trying to all, you know, create a better world, right?
Yeah.
So this is it's the Dog Aging Project, and I had not heard of this. I usually keep up with things that go on at Texas A&M fairly regularly because that's where I went to school, and the story reads that A&M and the Washington School of Medicine, and I think this is human medicine. So Human Medicine School in Washington, Texas A&M College of Veterinary Medicine, are doing what they are calling the DAP program, the Dog Aging Project. It began in 2018 and is set to run for about 10 years. And basically, researchers are trying to kind of identify the genetic, environmental, and lifestyle factors that are associated with a healthier lifespan in animals and then also in people, because there is a very strong correlation with many diseases and conditions that people get that relate back to dogs. And the article mentioned cancer as being one of those. But I just thought that was kind of cool that they're doing this.
It's very cool. Did you know that Fonzie was a member of the Dog Aging Project?
I did not.
Yep.
I did not.
I nominated him back in, I guess, late 2019. He got accepted early 2020. And so basically they just ask you for like lifelong information, like what is the current age of your pet? And then you go through and they ask on a routine basis, but not super, super often, you know, at least quarterly, like how are things going now that your dog is aging? Have you noticed these things?
And so then, how did you hear about it and what made you sign him up?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't really remember. I feel like I probably heard about it through AHA or something like that. Or read an article somewhere.
Yeah. So this story is from AHA. So there is that affiliation in AHA, American Animal Hospital Association, which we are an accredited member of. They do have lifestyle recommendations. And so, yes, I would be certain that's where you heard about it. But what you're bringing up is a very important point. You don't have to take your dog to College Station, Texas, and enroll it in the program because they're doing the research. You basically reach out to the DAP program, and they rely pretty heavily on the primary care veterinarian to help you provide complete medical records. And then if the DAP folks would want samples, then they would send you a kit to collect those samples and your primary care vet would help. And so it's just kind of a good thing to do and might be interesting to try to help, you know, just kind of in a small way change animals and change the world we live in.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, they ask things about like social behavior and learned behavior of your dog. Like, did you teach your dog tricks? Like, how long did it take? They do ask about truly the age of your pet and the health and are, you know, what kind of pet owner you are. Like,
okay,
are you taking your pet? Is it current on these list of vaccines? What is it eating? Does it have any metabolic disease? Like, and they are asking for medical records, and I did send that to them. And then of course, when Fonzie passed in December, I had to report to them that he was no longer, living. And so then they had a series of questions associated with like what happened, basically what succumbed him, if that's of any, whatever. But I know that there were at least, last time I looked, there were over 25,000 dogs enrolled in the program.
Yeah, I read that number. To date, more than 32,000 dogs have joined the DAP pack. They call it the DAP pack for obvious reasons.
Yes.
So, well, that's very cool. No idea when I pulled the story that he was involved in that. And probably, I don't know, hopefully, I'm going to speak for you. I would think when you got that message and you had to answer the questions after he passed, I would think it made you sad because obviously it made you think of him again and miss him, but also hopefully it made you feel a little bit good that he is going to be part of what we just kind of said, part of a project that's trying to improve the lives of animals and the people who love them.
Oh, sure. I mean, it makes me sad thinking about it right now, but yeah, their last and final email was basically just an end of life survey.
Yeah.
And so it is very sad. But to your point, yeah, no, he is, will always be a part of that.
Yeah. Healthy pet, happy life. Again, we kind of took that phrase from my eldest son, and it means a lot to us. We have a hard time explaining it. And using it, but it's
a
just
hard time, but yet it's so common sense.
So
but at
easy
the same rate, like, it is difficult to explain because it essentially umbrellas everything that we do.
Yeah, yeah, it's become kind of a internal mission.
Motto.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, I'm sorry. I did not mean to upset
you.
No,
that's okay.
But it's the human animal bond is what it's all about, and you exemplify that right now. So let's finish up with, you had a couple of articles about the winter weather that kind of swept through Texas, and we can briefly touch on that, but I think let's just give a few tips about what you should consider and or do during the winter months when there is a major snowstorm or cold storm that comes through, and things to be aware of.
Oh, sure. So you're saying like you are getting a winter weather advisory. So first of all, let's back up. The reason I thought this was interesting, because I, for one, do not think of snow or winter weather when I think of Texas, right?
Yeah, but gosh, I mean, as you know, yes.
I know, but I think if you say to someone like, oh yeah, it's snowing in Texas right now, they're like laughing because you think always like desert,
not,
hot.
Yeah.
But obviously Texas is huge, and so you have these parts of Texas that definitely will never see snow, and then you have these parts that definitely see all four seasons.
Well, correct. Correct. You know, you know it snows in Colorado. We know it snows in New Mexico often, but yeah, we don't think of Texas. But I think growing up, I feel like we had a snowstorm where I grew up at least once a year.
And you were from West Texas?
Some people say West Texas. It's really the southern panhandle, which is called the South Plains.
Okay.
So just south of Lubbock, Texas, where Texas Tech is. So we definitely have and had all four seasons. And I remember one year we had snow on the ground and freezing temperatures for like 3 weeks straight. To where we had to drive tractors around and take care of all the livestock. It was miserable.
I was going to say, so how does that affect like the sheep and the livestock and things like that? So we always talk about things mostly on a dog and cat perspective, but there are some pets you can't bring inside.
So, right, same thing. So
or
going
animals,
back to companion animals, right? Yeah. If you're having a blizzard outside, your pets need to be in with you in the house, right? That's the easiest way to take care of them and keep them warm. To your point, if it's sheep or cattle or swine, they need shelter. They need shelter. They don't always have to have a heat source, but they need shelter from the elements. That's super important. They can't just be out in the middle of a pasture or field with nothing to shelter them from the storm. So you know, for small animals, exotics, I guess I would say, if you've got a big tortoise outside. But
they're
yeah.
built essentially then to weather the temperature difference.
Same thing with a dog in a doghouse, right? If you have a dog that would actually go in its doghouse, let's say he's a backyard dog, doesn't come into the house. The purpose of the doghouse is to keep the elements from getting on him and in him. You don't have to have a heated doghouse, but you need to prevent the wind and the wetness of the snow from getting on the pet. And if you were to add a little bit of bedding, whether that's straw, hay, blankets, whatever, then that helps retain that body heat. So we would do the same thing, right? If we had a good enough sleeping bag, there's a lot of elements we could withstand without necessarily having heat. Our body heat would generate that. So
yeah, I just think for me especially, and granted probably because I grew up here in, you know, Georgia in the United States of America, like I've never really had to think about it because I've always had a house or something like that. And there are many people that don't. And one of these articles talks about 311, which I guess is like their non-emergency line,
okay,
in Austin, Texas, and about how people were calling and reporting homeless.
So I was about to go there. Homeless
pets.
Population that has pets. This is a real issue.
Yes. And so I don't know. I just don't ever think about it, I guess. And
let's go back to the more common companion animals that we see and their owners, right? Mm-hmm. So we said, you know, number one, don't make your pet stay out in the elements, right? Bring them inside. Number
but
two, if they are, provide a very nice shelter. Consider heating it if it's extreme temperatures. Be careful with the heat source, right? That can cause a different problem. Let's say after the storm and there's snow and ice outside, I would consider booties for their feet, the same type of booties that the Alaskan sled dogs would wear, because you can have a problem with the cold therapy there, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same way our hands and fingers could get frostbite. That could happen.
Sure.
I would be careful of any water source that your pet might get into, like if you have a swimming pool or lake, if they like to get in there, you would want to watch that, or you would want to make sure they don't walk across thin ice and drop down in into that type of...
I've seen plenty of videos this winter already about people jumping in and trying to save animals, which it's so commendable, but at the same rate, so dangerous.
It is very dangerous. It's like seeing a dog in the middle of an interstate and you stopping and trying to rescue that dog. I know personally of a story to where that there was a veterinarian that did that and got run over by a car right then and there. Mm. So, slipping on ice, same thing with people. So, right, anything, let's just, you know.
Totally personify it.
Healthy pet, happy life, right? Whatever, you know, person equal dog, equal cat. Cats are typically a little bit smarter in these situations than some dogs. But, I don't know. And if you're out for a walk with your pet and it's not a long-haired pet, consider a jacket of some sort to keep them warm.
Yeah.
So,
I think their feet, though, a lot of people just assume, like, oh, they have paw pads, and so that should be enough, and it's not always enough. It's similar, not. Like, in the summer, when it's 100 degrees and the concrete's 150, your pet is definitely feeling that if you can't walk on it barefoot, your dog shouldn't be able to walk on it barefoot.
Yeah, so. What's comfortable for you would be comfortable for your pet. So that's just a few. I'm sure there's others that we miss, but it's typically common sense. I guess I would – the thought came to my mind about the hair coat, and so we were talking large animals, sheep, right? So sheep, if they are unshorn, they still have a pretty long fleece or coat that acts as insulation, both in the summer and in the winter.
So I was going to say the same, right? So like dogs are the same way, and like, so I have a golden retriever. He has a long, flat, like curly coat. And
so the myth that when your dog is hot, we need to shave the hair off, typically you're actually making your pet warmer and hotter, and especially if they're out in the sun.
Because, not able to thermoregulate as well.
So just think insulation. Yeah. Same thing in your house, same thing with sheep, same thing with cattle, same thing with dogs. So
that totally took us on a whole different like realm of things. But nonetheless, I just thought it was impressive to see that there was a winter storm going through Texas in places like Dallas, Texas, and Austin, Texas, which, again, I just don't think about like snow and ice. But
same thing with Atlanta. I'm sure they act the same, very similar to the way we just freak out around here. There's no bread and milk on the shelf the minute somebody says snow, and I still have not figured that out, because last I checked, you do not need bread and milk to survive.
No, but you're right.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. So
it's bread and milk for
anyway,
sure.
Anyway, sign us out if you will, unless you've got something else.
No, I was just going to say, like, it's interesting more so, I think, in these places that don't usually get winter weather like that.
Yeah.
The articles were basically saying that there are more and more pets that they're having to attain. They're not being surrendered, but they're picking them up.
Rescuing
as far as
them.
Animal control and that kind of thing. So it was a call from the Dallas, Texas Animal Control. They're just basically begging for people to come out and foster so that they don't have to euthanize pets for space. Because they've been picking pets up because they are loose or, you know, left out into the cold and that kind of thing. But
cool.
Nonetheless,
I mean, not cool, but interesting.
Yeah, no, super interesting. I mean, it probably happens in those states that it's constantly cold as well, but maybe less because more people are accustomed to it. I don't know. All right, guys. Check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Remember, if you want to send us a picture, that's going to be the place to do it, as Dr. Miller said, or suggestion earlier in the show. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Make sure you hit subscribe where you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.